Welcome, everyone. Welcome. This is Catherine. I want to welcome you to our exclusive bonus seminar, How Can I Know If He's the One, with my wonderful relationship guru, Ken Page, who is really my new favorite teacher on the scene. I'm sure Ken's been around for a while, but he's my new favorite person who I can't get enough of. And this is part of your Ultimate Dating Demystified package. So we're really excited to hear what Ken has to share with us. I just want to introduce Ken to you. He's a very extraordinary man. He is a licensed social worker. He's the author of the book Deeper Dating, How to Drop the Games of Seduction and Discover the Power of Intimacy. I discovered him on O Magazine, Oprah's magazine. He had a featured article there, but he's also been featured on the Discovery Channel and Fox News Extra and the New York Times and Cosmopolitan and more. He's done a fascinating thing. Back in 2004, Ken created a deeper dating event platform where he trained facilitators to talk about intimacy and sexuality and spirituality in the world of dating, and then had participants there to go through a series of fun and enriching exercises. And so he's gotten a lot of attention for having really come to the dating scene with a lot of soul, a lot of heart, a lot of intelligence, and a lot of depth. So, Ken, welcome. I'm so delighted to have you as part of our Calling in the One family. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, Catherine, so much. Thank you so much. That was an incredible introduction. I really appreciate it.
Well, you know, there's so much that I know you're going to be sharing with us about just the wisdom that you have about how to help people to really discern how to find their partner, if the person that they're with is the right one for them. And you have a very unique take on the criteria from which to be looking. But I wonder if you would just start us off by sharing a little bit about yourself and about your own journey and about your own beautiful story of getting married recently to your beloved husband.
Thank you, Catherine. And I'd love to tell that story. But before I do, I just want to kind of respond back to the things you said and say that it feels so right for me to be doing this bonus interview because I have such deep respect for your work. And the way in which you approach the search for love truly, unequivocally, as a deep journey of personal transformation and spiritual growth. It's not about gimmicks. It's not about tricks. It's about the deepest, deepest work of the person and of the soul. And I love that, and I believe in that so fully. So I feel very at home and very glad to be here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Ken.
Yes.
I'm glad for our emerging friendship, really. I think, you know, our respective fields have brought us together, but I'm super excited about getting to know you and just having these opportunities to work together because I just feel we are so deeply aligned.
That's so great. And I'm just very happy to be here to talk about this subject that is, you know, kind of what we're going to be talking about today is if I had to leave an audience with any one concept, it would be the one that we're going to be talking about tonight. So I'm excited to jump into that. But, you know, and I think I'm going to kind of give an introduction to that and then bring that into my story because my story is the story of what we'll be talking about tonight.
Great. Great. Wonderful.
Yes, yes. And what I want to say is that what I'm going to talk about tonight is a distinction of such importance, you know, this concept of how will I know if this person, if he or she is the one, how will I know that? On one level, it's a question that's about criteria. And we'll be talking about that, very specific criteria that will help you know whether or not this person could be the one. And finally, that knowledge is going to be a click in your insides where there's a yes, and it's a yes that comes from your best self, your truest self, your least desperate self, your fullest self. And that's a wonderful moment, but there are criteria that will help you get there and also help you know kind of who to stay away from and who to avoid and where not to be placing your energy. And very excited to talk about that. But on another level, it's not so much about criteria, it's about a distinction that is truly world-shifting and applies to all relationships. And it's the concept of the difference between what I call attractions of deprivation and attractions of inspiration. And it's kind of like a kind of gold standard marker of the path to happiness or the path to pain. It's very simple, but it's also very, very rich. And I hope and believe that it's going to really change, I know that it has the power to change the lives of the people who are listening to this interview, as it's changed my life and changed so many other people's lives that I work with. And at the end of this interview, I'm going to ask everyone who wants to make a commitment that's truly a life-changing commitment, and I'm excited to bring us all to that point as we move toward the end of this interview.
Oh, wonderful. We're all in. Thank you.
Great. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I heard this quote that I really loved, and it's from David Brooks, who's a writer for the New York Times, and he said, if you have a great job and a crappy relationship, you're probably not going to be that happy. But if you have a crappy job and a great relationship, there's a really good chance that you're going to be pretty happy. And therefore, he said, almost every college course should be about teaching people how to find that right person. And I adore that. And I just think that there's so much focus on how we can become someone desirable, which, you know, in some levels is a great thing to talk about. And Catherine, your book, Calling in the One, is profoundly about becoming the kind of person who you would want to fall in love with, which is...
Right.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah, it is. It's very, very true. Which is kind of so much at the heart of this. And that kind of journey, that piece of the journey where you learn to discriminate is so huge. There is such a need for training in the kind of deeper physics of attraction and these simple choices that we're just not taught to make with depth and maturity. And, you know, I see my friend, my son is 14, and I watch him and his teenage friends, and I feel like I could tell the boys and the girls that are probably going to be happy in love and the ones that won't. And, you know, the girls and the boys who keep choosing the unavailable people, the bad boys, the bad girls, the ones who are really exciting but where the connection is fueled by terrible betrayals and disappointments and intensity. And I just know the road those kids are going to take because I've been on it. And then I see the kids who make these simple choices to choose the boys and the girls who are just kind of bone-deep decent. And that's who they're attracted to. And I say, oh, those kids are going to probably have a much easier road. And that's what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about the path to happiness in dating. And because this is something that, you know, as someone who I considered myself chronically single for decades and struggled so much with this and made such bad choices again and again, and I even actually started a support group for chronically single psychotherapists because there are so many of us, and that group was very, very helpful to me. But so here's my story. I was born in the late 1950s in suburban New York, Long Island, and was born a gay boy to a Holocaust survivor dad and mom who felt that the only way to survive in this world was to be tough and strong. And I was the kind of person who felt everything. I felt the beautiful, I felt the painful, and God knows, I felt the dysfunctional. And it knocked me to my knees. And the lesson that I learned from my parents was basically cut it out. Like, get over that. That's weakness. And so I never was able to get on my feet in the world because my gifts, which were that sensitivity, were never honored.
Oh.
So, yeah. So what does that mean, though? That means in the world of dating, this is something that's powerful, I feel, and true, is that the degree to which we can't honor those core, deepest parts of our being is the degree to which we're going to be sexually attracted to people who also don't honor them. And as we learn to honor those parts of ourselves, our sexual attractions and our romantic attractions actually begin to change. But I didn't know that yet. All I knew was that I would just follow my attraction and hope that the person on the other end of my attraction was decent and available. And it didn't work because I was constantly attracted to the cocky kind of guys, to the guys who didn't feel the world as deeply as I did, and in fact, didn't really feel empathy enough at all. I was attracted to guys that didn't feel as much as I did because I had never learned to honor those qualities in myself. And I spent so long looking for my ideal husband, my ideal boyfriend, and failing again and again and again, constantly, until I went into therapy and began to discover the treasure in my core, which was all these qualities of sensitivity and gentleness and a kind of fierce commitment to honesty and all these qualities that had been mortifying to me before. As I finally learned to treasure them, something amazing happened. People who were kind and decent, who I was attracted to, started becoming attracted to me. And it was a really noticeable shift because I always felt like there was something, I felt down to my bones that whatever that it was that got exciting people to be attracted to you, I did not have it. I just didn't have it. So when this change happened, it was really kind of a miracle for me, and it was the beginning of a shift that took years and years. And somewhere along the line, I learned that my happiness was going to be found with people who I deeply respected and deeply felt safe with, who inspired me by the way they were in the world. And when I learned that, things began to change. And I began to say no to those incredibly compelling scratch-the-itch attractions, to people who just were going to ultimately not see me for who I was. And that journey continued for a really long time. At a certain point, I kind of gave up because I felt like I had another calling, and the calling that I had was a different calling to love, and that calling was to become a father. And that led me on a journey to adopt my son as an infant, as a single dad from Cambodia, which was life-changing and led to deeper dating and led to everything. It led me to my partner because I chose love, and doors opened, a swinging a hallway of doors opened up to a new life for me because I said yes to love in a different arena. Mm-hmm. And kind of where I'm going to kind of finish the story up is that 7 years ago at an event for gay parents, I met my partner. And I knew from the start that this was someone with qualities of decency and goodness that I had been looking for always. And he was really attractive too. Like the whole package for me.
Wow.
Yeah, both of those things. And I just, you know, it felt like a dream come true, but it was a dream that had taken so many years of hard work. And Catherine, your book was a big part of that journey. I just want to say that.
Oh, I'm so excited to hear that.
Yeah, it really was. I felt like this is the kind of book I want to be reading. This is the path that I want to take because it's real. And so I met Greg, and fast forward 7 years, my wonderful Holocaust survivor dad, who had gotten through so much of his anger and so much of his fear and had become such a gentle and beautiful man, was close to passing, and he had a dream that he wanted me and Greg to get married. He was really funny.
Aww.
You know, he said, Ken, you and Greg, he was like a tough guy still, so, you know, he said, you know what I think about you and Greg? You fit together like an ass on a pail. That was what he said.
Oh, my gosh. He did not.
Yes, that's what he said. So he said, so I want you to get married. And Greg and I, to this day, are still trying to figure out who is who in that image.
That's really adorable.
We finally were ready to be married. It was a blending family issue. It took a while. It took years. We did really well with it. And 2 weeks ago, my dad took a turn for the worse. And we had plans to be married on June 5th. And 2 weeks ago, I got a call from my mom, and my mom said, come over right now. Take David out of school. Everyone come, because we're going to do our vigil now. And so we all came racing down. And my dad was there and still cognizant. And I said to him, Dad, you're going to get to see us get married. We're going to do it right now. We had just gotten our wedding license the day before. I had asked them to rush it. And somehow, through a miracle, a justice of the peace was procured, and Greg ran out and got rings from Kohl's, really quick rings from Kohl's, and my sister and my son went out and got decorations, and Greg and I wrote our vows out really quickly and with a lot of heart, and we stood in front of my dad, and we got married. And when we were finishing getting married, my dad had passed. And it was a blessing that will be with us all our lives.
Oh, my God.
And I guess the heart of the blessing, yeah, oh, my God. And the heart of the blessing was in the goodness in our bond and the goodness of my father's kind of gift to us. Mm-hmm. And that's a gift that was with us from the beginning and is going to remain with us. So I was
really
excited
story.
To share this story.
Thank you, and I just want to extend our condolences on the loss of your father. And what a beautiful tribute to family, and oh my gosh, so deeply moving.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was unreal, and it was beautiful, and we just knew that every part of him was giving us a yes, you know, as this happened. And so I'm so happy to share that story, because what it's a story about was a shifting of my relationship to my sexual and romantic attractions. And I am so excited to pass on the keys to each one of you right now, kind of as we continue.
It's almost hard to imagine that you know, given how you're describing your relationship and your family, that you two once so deeply struggled. And I just kind of want to recap some of what you said about honoring. When you learn to honor your core gift of sensitivity, that's when it all turned around.
That's when it
really
all turned around.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And that's such an important point, because for everyone listening to this interview, you know, and this is something I teach in my book, I kind of take people on a step-by-step process to discover and identify their core gifts. But right now, probably, each one of you could think about what your core gifts are, and you know them by the places that you are touched the most deeply in life, the places you're the most inspired, the places where you can be the most deeply hurt. And let me tell you right now that the key, I believe, to your happiness in finding a partner is finding someone who, in the places where you are capable of the deepest inspiration, meets you, sees you, celebrates you, and sparks you. and in the places where you can be the most hurt, that this is someone who does not chronically hurt you and who can make space to listen and understand and change and hear. Because our core gifts are genius. There are genius, and genius is not an easy thing. It's a life work to learn how to bear the genius of our core gifts. But what I would say to each one of you is that if in your dating life you make a decision to lead with those parts of yourself, your filter for finding the right person will be that you'll be leading with your soul, and you will know really quickly who can match that and who can't. And now I'm going to talk about this concept of attractions of inspiration and attractions of deprivation, which I think is,
Yeah, I just said thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, yes. And I do feel like it's a gift, because knowing this just really changes things. So this is, I think, the greatest distinction that we can make in our search for love, kind of like, in a way, the single greatest choice. And it's really not a choice that we're taught to make. We are taught again and again, I think, about how we have to get over our sensitivity, get over our vulnerability, get over our insecurities, and project a kind of sense of confidence and playing hard to get, and all these things that ultimately actually lead us away from love. All those tricks lead us away from love as opposed to toward love. Because when we discount our vulnerability, we are going to become attracted to people who also discount our vulnerability. It's a formula. It's a formula. It's the deep physics of attraction. So I had a client, and I'll call her Jen. And Jen had a situation where she kept also being attracted to guys who were unavailable, the kind of bad boy kind of guys. And those were the only people she was attracted to again and again and again. And she wanted to get married, and she wanted to have kids, and she wanted all of that. But she wanted to be attracted to the person who she married and had kids with. The problem was the guys that she was attracted to were not marriage material. She kept hoping they were. She kept hoping and praying, but she knew deep down that they weren't. And the guys who weren't attractive to her. And she came to me because she was just so clear of this really terrible conundrum. And God knows that was a conundrum I knew really, really well. But she had a revelation in a session one day that was so beautiful and so powerful and was kind of the seed for what I'm going to be talking about here. And the revelation was that even though she was attracted again and again to these sparky, exciting relationships with people who ultimately didn't honor her, and she ultimately didn't honor them because she didn't respect them, even though that was true, she remembered back in high school when she had fallen in love with a guy who was really wonderful. He was kind, he was decent, he was thoughtful, he was caring. He inspired her soul, and she was really attracted to him too. She was in love with him. He was like a dream person for her. And it didn't end up working for a lot of different reasons, not related to his qualities of his personality. But she realized, oh my God, I remember that. I can be attracted to someone who really inspires me. I can be attracted to someone good. And I know that because I was. And she realized, and I realized along with her, that she, as did I, had two different circuitries of attraction. What I call attractions of deprivation, which is where we're attracted to people because they almost love us, because they almost feed our soul, because they almost see who we are, because they're almost available, because they almost treat us right. And those attractions grab us. They grab us and pull us. They're so intense because they touch the places where we fear we're not lovable. And we feel if we can get this person to be the person we want them to be and to really love us, then finally we're going to be happy and we're going to know we're worthy. And, oh, my God, the ache, the ancient, ancient ache that goes with those attractions. And I know that many of you know just what I'm talking about.
It's very fascinating what you're saying. And have you mapped out kind of the steps of what would have someone go from attractions of deprivation to attractions of inspiration? And I just want to say, Ken, I think you're hitting on probably the number one question that I get from people, or one of the number one questions is, yes, but how do I stop wanting the people who don't want me?
Yeah, I agree.
I think people
Catherine,
feel so powerless about it, you know, like, but that's what I want.
Yeah.
I can't help myself. That's what I want. And the guys that want me, I don't want them. Or the, you know, the women who are attracted to me, I could, you know, I have no interest in.
Yep. And I can tell you, I lived that. I lived that down to the bone. I really can promise you that. And I do have a pathway out. And it's a path of hope and it's a path of healing, and I'm going to lay that out. But I just want to say that I really agree with you on that. And kind of when I think in my work with clients, in my own life and also with my friends, the sticking point, the hardest sticking point of all is letting go of attractions of deprivation. But part of the reason for that is a kind of cognitive reason. It's because we really think that they're love. We think, this is really fierce love, and if I don't go along with this, I'm going to have to settle for something less. And that is what it is something that is like a cry for love that we were never given. You know, Harville Hendricks says this really powerfully. He says that the people who are like tens on the attraction spectrum for us, the people who kind of make us weak-kneed and crazy and just completely make us nuts, we're so desirous of them, do that because they embody the worst characteristics of our parents. And our heart is trying to go back to the scene of the crime to finally get them to love us right. And that's so powerful. But so the key is understanding and finding and discovering your circuitry for your attractions of inspiration. And I want to tell you a little bit, I want to give you some kind of criteria for how you know the difference between an attraction of deprivation and an attraction of inspiration. And as I say these things, think about you and your story. I'm going to start with attractions of inspiration. I want you just to think about who you have known, dated, married, been with, or even friends, or even loved ones or family members who embody these qualities. Because simple, these people in love, in friendship, in anywhere are the path to happiness. They are the path to happiness. It's truly that amazingly simple. The degree to which we surround ourselves with those people and feed those relationships is the degree to which, to a large sense, that we're going to have a happy life. So here are the qualities. And I just encourage all of you to just think about these qualities and think about who you know who has them. The first is a generosity of spirit. And that's actually a really important one. It's a natural ability to be generous. It's a need to be generous. It's an essential generosity, which you talk about in Lesson 36, Catherine, and in wonderful ways about developing your own generosity. So that's one quality, is generosity of spirit. Another quality is integrity. And what that means is that you see in this person a commitment to truth, to honesty, to being the kind of person they say they want to be. Integrity is kind of like a commitment to being real, even when it's hard for you to do that. Another is consistency. Catherine, were you going to say something?
No, I'm just loving this criteria. This is really great.
Oh, yes, yes.
I mean,
yes,
just right there, that's just going to bring so much clarity. Is this person bringing generosity to me? Is this person bringing their integrity to me? Are they really being honest and truthful? Do they have a commitment to truth? Okay, tell us the rest. I love this.
Yeah, but I really want to go with that because you're right. Stop right there. If you are dating someone and it's not a yes on both of those, I could pretty much promise you you're not going to have a happy life with them. So, yeah, they're really big and they're really serious. And I want to promise you there are people out there with these qualities. Another one is their availability. And by availability, I don't mean that they're like going to fall in love with you and be committed immediately. Of course, this is a process. But that there's some essential way that they are available for love. And in the places where they're not available for love, because fear of intimacy is just part of the human condition, that they're willing to do the work. So that kind of essential availability is another one. Another one is a quality of decency and goodness. How do they treat the waiters in a restaurant? How do they treat your family member who maybe is kind of difficult? How do they treat people who are vulnerable and don't have something to offer them? A quality of goodness and decency is so huge. And then the way that they treat you, that they treat you and are committed to treating you with goodness. And of course they're going to screw up, but when they screw up, they're willing to look at it and work on it. And finally...
And were you going to say consistency too? I kind of cut you off for consistency.
Oh, thank you. Yes, absolutely consistency, which is kind of very connected to integrity. It means that... you don't become another person. You can see the person is really trying to be integrated, that this person is, let me think of how to say this in a better way. The person's not sometimes kind and sometimes mean, sometimes empathic and sometimes nasty, sometimes available and sometimes just blows you off. There's an essential consistency to that person.
Wow.
And the other one that I want to say is that there is a spark, because I don't want any of you to think that you need to marry someone or fall in love with someone where there's no sexual or romantic spark. There has to be a spark, and you deserve that. The thing is that we usually look for turn-on first and hope all the other good stuff will follow. That fails every time. If you don't put this stuff on at least equal footing with attraction, you're probably not going to find what you're looking for. So these are the qualities of attractions of inspiration, and you have it in you, almost everyone has it in you, to fall in love with someone for those qualities. But it's going to be different when you do, and I'll tell you some of the things that are going to be different. It's probably going to be
slow. Can I ask you a question now? I want to hear about the differences. It seems to me that these qualities are going to take a bit of time to assess. And one of the things that happens when there's chemistry is I think people get overly invested and they're all in, and we go so into fantasy so quickly, so into projection, that we don't give ourselves time to assess this. So I just wonder if you could just give us some guidance on that.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. That's so true. That's so true. And the great thing about attractions of inspiration is usually they don't turn into those insane skyrockets in the beginning. Because those skyrockets where you are so nuts that you can't see the person happen when you're being triggered by fear of abandonment. And so these attractions of inspiration usually grow a little bit more slowly, which is a good thing, because you get to see who the person is. But what you're saying is so important. And the words there, the motto is eyes open, eyes open. If you see qualities that you look at and think, I don't respect those and I don't trust those, you are probably right. And so what you're saying, Catherine, is so hugely important, is that painful thing of saying, what I see really troubles me. And I'm going to keep watching, and if that continues, this is going to be a no for me.
That's beautiful. So
yeah,
eyes open.
So important.
Pay attention. Pay attention.
Yes.
Eyes open.
Yes.
Got it.
Yes, eyes open. Yes. So now I want to talk about attractions of deprivation a little bit, and then I'm going to tell you how you can begin to switch from one circuitry to the other with techniques that will heal you, empower you, and fill your heart with a lot of healing at the same time. But we are going to go to attractions of deprivation, which are some of the most exciting, thrilling, and agonizing attractions that there are. And I want to start with two criteria that are hugely, hugely important. And I want to put these up front because these are real eye-open places. And some of you may have a hard time hearing this, and I truly understand that. But here's what I want to say. If the person you're dating has an alcohol problem or a substance abuse problem, and if you see that, if you see that this person is using substances to medicate their feelings and doing it in such a way that it gets them in trouble in their lives and they can't seem to stop, then this person probably has a substance abuse problem, and until they're sober, you are going to have a painful relationship with them. I plead with each one of you not to enter into a deep commitment with someone who has an active substance abuse problem. And if you are already in a relationship, I just want to tell you that if this person is not willing to get sober, it's going to hurt in the long run. So I'm just being very blunt about that. And also, of course, I want to say to each listener, if you in your heart of hearts feel that you have a substance abuse problem, please, please, please get sober. Address it and fix it, because none of this good information that you're going to get in the entire course is going to be able to stick like it needs to until you do that.
Thank you. I feel you're really speaking to a very deep truth, Ken. Thank you.
Yes, and I know that it's one that you really understand and honor. And
Well, and it makes me wonder about the kind of softer addictions, workaholism, right? Or I don't know what else might be a soft addiction, food addiction.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. And I just want to say about that, we all have them to some degree.
Yeah.
But if they're really getting in the way of a person's life, then they do need to address it. But we all have soft addictions, and that's a good way to describe them. But if there are substance abuse addictions or addictions, let's say, to gambling that really do damage, that's kind of a different story, and that's a true red flag. And this also is true for people who have untreated mental disorders. And I'm not talking about, you know, mild depression or you know, some degree of anxiety or depression or things like that. I'm talking about kind of the more serious mental disorders which are untreated. And once again, eyes open. If your new beloved or the person you're dating or whoever it is not willing to get the help they needed, it's probably not going to go well. So I'm putting these, you know, very firmly in that category, even though it may hurt to hear.
Mm.
Moving along, another one would be dishonesty, a tendency to lie, to be untruthful, to not treasure truth even when it's hard. And if you see someone who's dishonest, that's a big, big deal. That's a serious problem. That's what's called characterological. It's something that's deeply ingrained and something to really stay away from. You really want a partner who's honest. Another one is abuse. If this person can be occasionally cruel to you, verbally abusive, God knows physically abusive, These are things to really be aware of and stay away from. Now, all of us get angry. All of us are nasty. All of us behave badly. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about our kind of real tendency toward a chronic, ugly kind of meanness of spirit. That's really something to watch out for. Someone who treats you with disrespect, someone who manipulates you in really clear ways, continually manipulates you, and someone with whom you just essentially don't have a deep sense of emotional safety with. That's how you know, because you sometimes maybe feel safe, and then you really don't feel safe. Well, you're right. This person almost definitely isn't safe. So these are qualities of attractions of deprivation. Of course, unavailability, where the person always holds the promise that they'll be available, but they don't, and they're not willing to do the work to become available. These are attractions of deprivation, and they can really seduce us incredibly.
Well, you know, I think that a lot of the people who do have these kind of character disorders are very seductive.
Yes.
Right, and you can become quite intoxicated by their kind of, you know, wonderful personalities in many ways. So character and personality are two different things, this kind of charisma. And so when we're all talking about, you know, noticing what you're basically, your list has to do with the revelation of character. Who somebody really is.
Oh, you're so right. That's right. That's exactly it. The revelation of character. That's what you're looking for here. And so I just want to say some of the things that some people might be thinking that I've heard in classes that I teach and in lectures. So one thing people might be thinking is, all right, so you're telling me that I have to fall in love with and marry someone who doesn't really excite me. And I want to say to you, absolutely not. An attraction of inspiration can bring you to a point of such rich excitement, but it's going to be excitement mixed with peace. It's going to be excitement mixed with safety. It's going to be an excitement where when you're having sex with this person and you look into each other's eyes, you see passion. You feel that sense of being drenched with passion, and you see goodness and you see love shining in their face at the same time. And there's no greater happiness than that. So don't think that you need to fall in love with someone or that you need to commit to someone where there's not that attraction. And there's also just reams of research out there on how to deepen attraction in healthy relationships. And we're not going to have time to get into that now. But I will say that attractions of inspiration sometimes grow more slowly because the person's available. So you don't get kind of hysterically desirous of them in the same way. But that is a slow kind of growth that is beautiful. Attractions of inspiration grow based on connection. Attractions of deprivation grow based on fear of abandonment. And so that's a really important point. And what I want to challenge each one of you to consider doing is to make a commitment. And that commitment is that you say no. And it's not going to be easy, and you'll need the help of friends. But say no to your attractions of deprivation. Save yourself the time, save yourself the year, save yourself the heartache, and make a choice that you will only choose attractions of inspiration. Will that narrow your field? Dramatically. Do you want it to narrow your field? Absolutely. And I want to promise you something else at the same time. And this is kind of one of the things that feels most like a miracle to me. And that is, when you make the decision, really, 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 this is true, when you make the decision to embrace and only follow your attractions of inspiration, the people you meet are going to start to change. You're going to meet and date kinder, more available people. And you're going to lose your taste for people who chip away at your sense of self-worth. It's an amazing, amazing thing. But it happens. It really happens. And it's one of the most hopeful signs you'll see. And you'll see it pretty early on. when you start making this change, when you start really treasuring your sensitivity instead of thinking that the world of dating means you need to get that stomped on again and again. No, your greatest filter is your decency, your kindness, and your vulnerability. Because if you lead with those parts of yourself, knowing that you're only going to choose people who have cultivated those same qualities in themselves, then you will say no to people really quickly. And your field will not shrink. Your true field will actually open up and blossom. You'll see that happen, and it's an amazing thing. And there's actually great science around that, too. There's a principle called the principle of instrumentality. And what that says is that when you have somebody who meets a goal of yours, when you have a particular goal and you really are committed to that goal, you're going to start noticing people who can help you meet that goal. You're going to become more attracted to those people, and you're going to become less attracted to people who won't help you meet that goal. So when you make this choice to only pursue your attractions of inspiration, you're going to lose your taste little by little for those attractions of deprivation. You're going to start to get more beautifully turned on to people who are attractions of inspiration, and you're going to notice them more. It's a great leap of faith. I know it. I know it is. But it's a leap of faith that will change your future.
Oh, beautiful. This is so rich. I wonder if we could go back for a moment to something you said earlier about when you honor your core gifts, suddenly the kind of people who show up will change.
Yeah.
You said something about, you kind of touched on how to know what your core gifts are, but I wonder if you could just really flesh that out a little bit more for us so people can start to identify what their core gift might be.
Sure. Well, you know, there's a kind of very rich process which takes a little bit of time and is outlined in my book and my courses. And we won't be able to do that now because this concept of core gifts is kind of very counterintuitive. The amazing miracle is that we discover our greatest gifts often in our deepest insecurities. It's a beautiful, beautiful and precious thing. And our relationship to our core gifts defines the story of our life. It really does. But it's complex, but I think that there's something very simple that I can offer that will help listeners really be able to figure out what your core gifts are. It's really simple. Notice in your interactions with people, what inspires you and what hurts you and what leaves you flat. And if you start noticing that, if you just go through the next couple days and get a journal and note what kind of interactions with other people, with yourself and with the world fill your heart, nourish you, kind of inflame your heart, give you hope and joy, that's your golden path. And you want to find somebody who makes you feel that way. Those are the language of your soul. That's kind of like God's heart inside of you speaking. That's your language. So if you just start to notice in your dating life and everywhere else, who are the people who inspire you like that? Then you just think to yourself, all right, so what's the part of me that's being inspired? What's the passion in me? What's the thing that I care about? Well, that is a core gift. And then if you also notice what things hurt your heart in your interactions with people, you know, if you notice the kind of things that make you feel sad, that make you feel an ache, that make you feel a despair, that make you feel a deep compassion, that make you feel an anger at an injustice, the kind of things that hurt you, if you can look at those and ask yourself, is this familiar to me? Is this a hurt that I know well? Does this touch on a value that I care about, and I'm hurt because that value is being dishonored? Well, whatever that value is a core gift of yours. And as much as you might have been told that you're too sensitive and you need to kind of toughen up, I would say to you, that's a sensitivity that is of your soul, and it needs to be honored and treasured so that you can learn how to handle it in your life. So, quite simply, in your dating life, that translates into you want to date somebody who doesn't hurt you and who inspires you. And you will know. You will know. But the thing is, we're not taught to look for this. And if you have eyes for inspiration, if you just develop eyes for inspiration and make it paramount in your dating life, watch how much wiser you're going to become, how much happier you're going to become, and how much more you're going to kind of love yourself in a very essential way.
Beautiful. I just love this.
Ken,
what
are
you doing? What are you doing that people can participate in? I know that on your website you have you're giving away a free ebook and 4 insights to transform your search for love. I just feel there's such authenticity and truth to what you're speaking about, and it's so refreshing.
Thank you.
I just feel like my whole body is relaxing inside of, you know, it's so human and so beautiful and so hopeful, a very hopeful message. And
it is,
I think that's what it is. And I think, you know, really what we're standing for in our community is that no matter what you've been through in your past, no matter what your crazy upbringing was, that we have the power to create a different experience, that the past does not determine our future in love, that who we're standing for being, what we're standing for having, our willingness to live in alignment with that to the best of our ability, our willingness to measure ourselves against the future and hold ourselves accountable for leaning into that future to become who we would need to be to manifest that future. That's it. And I'm really hearing the message in a very beautiful way that's similar with what you're saying. You're basically saying it doesn't matter what you've been through in the past. You have the chance to recreate who you're attracted to and what the criteria is and to manifest happiness and love.
So true, and it happens so slowly. Like, you're right, Catherine, it's not something that happens immediately. It's a journey, but as you learn to do just the things you described and learn to honor those parts of yourself where your vulnerability, your heart, your soul really live, your attractions will begin to change. And it's just a wonderful thing. And it's something that I teach, and I very much appreciate you you asking me kind of how people can learn more about my work, because that's something I love to respond to. And so I would say that first of all, a great thing to do would be to go to deeperdating.com and to sign on to my mailing list and receive my free ebook, 4 Insights That Transform Your Search for Love. And these are 4 different pieces that I've written that have gone viral through my Psychology Today writing and have really touched chords in people, and I think are 4 of the pillars of the work that I teach. So I'd love everybody to be able to get that free ebook and also to hear about the work that I'm doing. So that's number 1, and then number 2 is Deeper Dating, which is, you know, that book is the work of my heart, my life, and my soul, and it's got all of this turned into an actual course. It's a course in a book that you can do alone or with someone else who wants to do it with you, and so I recommend that everybody, if this interests you and speaks to you, that you get the book, because that's the kind of the richest depiction of this work. And I also work with people privately and in small groups, and I do that in my private practice. And so anybody who's interested in that work, you can just go to my website and click on the link that says work privately with me. And I can tell you about the small groups I lead, the larger groups, and the individual work that I do, which is something I really love to do. And then finally, every once in a while, I teach a very, very large online class, and I'm going to be teaching one of those in September, and It's a beautiful, rich 7-week course that takes everyone through each of the stages that I teach in the book over the course of those 7 weeks. And it's I love, love, love teaching this class. It's just a rich and wonderful community of people.
And we're going to be sending something out on about that because we just love your work. And we want our people to know and flock to your feet. You work virtually, these small groups and the private groups, private meetings, you'll work with people virtually?
Virtually, and if they're in New York City and I happen to have an opening, I don't have that many in-person openings, but when I do, I usually have a waiting list and people who kind of float in case an opening comes up. But yes, virtually are the groups and most of my individual sessions, and occasionally I have openings for
Excellent. Well. Oh, good. Well, thank you, Ken. So that's deeperdating.com, everyone.
Right.
Ken, thank you so much for today. I feel like I just had the most delicious meal. I feel so fed on the level of soul, and I know I'm speaking for everyone when I just, you know, express my deepest gratitude to you for the work that you're doing and the distinctions you've really forged for us. Any final words? Anything you'd like to say in closing?
Oh, well, thank you. Yes, two things. One is I feel just the same. There's your work is work of, you know, everyone who is following your work is doing it through their attractions of inspiration. And so I just really want to acknowledge that and honor that and say that I feel the same way. And all of us know the paths that really have goodness, integrity, and wisdom. And so I just, you know, yay for all of you that are doing this work with Catherine. And I want to close just with a quote that I say all the time and that I really believe, and that is this, that your search for love is not a search for a needle in a haystack, and it is not a race against time. It's an intimacy journey, and every step you take on that journey will move you closer to the love that you're seeking. And I really believe that.
Ah, oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Ken.
Thank you, Catherine.
What a joy to be with you. I look forward to speaking with you soon. And we're just showering you with our love and blessings on your beautiful marriage.
Thank you so much.
All the best. All right. Lots of love, Ken. Thank you so much. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.